From 2820 Radio in Philadelphia, it's The Build. Conversations with entrepreneurs and innovators about their dreams, their triumphs, and their challenges.
Hospitality. It's the warm feeling you get when you're taken care of at your favorite business. And it's the pride every entrepreneur takes when serving a customer. And yet, in too many businesses, something as warm and friendly as a cup of coffee can turn into a transaction instead of a moment of relaxation and reflection. John Michael Cord, Tana Marita, and Chandler Wren share a passion for hospitality and an even stronger desire to help more people discover what great coffee can truly do for your body and your soul. By focusing on unique experiences and by exceeding customer expectations, they've grown from a series of pop-up events in Charlotte, North Carolina, into a brand that's roasting its own beans, managing a physical cafe, and shipping product across the country. It's the story of Hex Coffee, coming up next on The Build.
The Build is made possible with support from 2820 Press, providing business consulting and content strategy services to customer-obsessed companies nationwide. More information at 2820press.com.
It's The Build. I'm Joe Taylor Jr., joined today by the guys from Hex Coffee in Charlotte, North Carolina. We're joined by John, Tanner, and Chandler, who are in the roastery. Tell us a little bit about the physical space that you've set up for your brand.
So I guess the best thing to say is we're in a very large room that we have our coffee roaster. We have a lab set up in here for us to do training and small scale retail. And we also do a good amount of cold brew production in here as well. Yeah, it's a pretty multi functional space.
Imagine a big white box that we're roasting out of.
Yeah,
that's pretty much it. Not a lot to it.
One of the things I find compelling about your story is that you started by hosting a number of pop-up experiences. Tell me a little bit about your origin, how you decided to get together, and tell me a little bit more about that journey from having no physical space to actually having a space where you can control the quality of your product.
Yeah, well, so this was, I guess we started back in 2015. I was working in a coffee at this, like basically one of the first like local specialty coffee shops here in Charlotte. And I was working as a barista there. John Michael was also working at as a barista at a different shop and then recently transferred over to that same shop. So we became good friends through working on bar together. Chandler at the time was a regular at the shop, and we kind of all linked up. We lived all really close to each other, so we would always like meet up for drinks at like this local bar. And basically it was through working in coffee together and just kind of chatting and dreaming and scheming. Charlotte was in this place where there was, I'd say, a lot of buzz about the city. The city was growing pretty rapidly. Although with that, like, kind of instant rapid growth, you kind of have like these, a lot of businesses that kind of lag behind where other cities are developmentally. And me being from Portland, where I'm very used to like coffee shops on every corner, Charlotte was in this place where it had like one or two in the entire city, like doing really good things. So we knew that we wanted to kind of provide a voice in there, because there were a lot of voices that could be said in coffee that were not being said, just because of the nature of having so few coffee shops. So we met up at that bar and we were just like chatting and kind of going over ideas and, kind of, I guess, spitballing off of each other for, how we could introduce our own voice into the city of Charlotte, through the lens of coffee. So, you know, with two barista salaries and a salary from like a, a like volunteer government employee, basically. We built a couple of tabletops and bought some pour over equipment, a couple of waffle makers, and just started making cold brew and pour overs and waffles, and basically asking local businesses if they would want us to kind of take over their space in the mornings, and turn their physical space into our cafe space for, like, you know, the 3 or 4 hours that morning, you know.
What kind of businesses did you approach with that offer?
Well, Charlotte was in this place where it was a lot of like craft beer spots were opening up. And that was kind of the tide that the city was in at the moment. So we saw this correlation between craft beer. If you understand the difference between drinking a Coors Light and drinking a, like, you know, mixed fermentation Saison, you could probably understand the difference between drinking Folgers and what we're serving. So we partnered up with a lot of beer concepts. That bar that we would always like meet at, that was like our local bar, that was one of our first pop-up spots. And then like a growler shop, a couple of breweries, kind of like a, like this like marketplace kind of thing, and a lot of different places, but we kind of skirted the line with a lot of like beer centric places.
A lot of our mentality when we were doing our pop-up was creating our sense of place in something that already has a sense of place. So putting Hex's kind of feel to something that has an identity in itself, which has worked really well with a lot of evening time businesses such as beer stores, because the Charlotte Market was that. And I think it really gave our pop-ups a kind of another level compared to other pop-ups that are around, because it was more or less people would come there specifically to visit us in the mornings rather than going there to that beer shop for another experience that they were used to. So they were kind of they would walk into what felt like a natural coffee shop inside of something that they were used to getting beer at.
I find this fascinating too, because I think the experience you're describing in Charlotte is something that I've seen in a lot of places across America, in that our country's relationship with coffee has changed a lot, even in the last 10 years. Describe for me what you've observed about how we're asking for more from our relationship with coffee.
Well, I think that kind of stems a good bit from kind of obsessive nature, at least recently, with knowing more about where our food is coming from, knowing more about where our like clothes, our cars, you know, anything that is a tangible product. We've started to focus a lot more on traceability and transparency, and wanting to make sure that what we are consuming, as it is our nature in a lot of ways in America and the developed world, like, we just consume a bunch of stuff. And so we've started asking a lot of questions about, like, why is this better than others? Why should I spend more for this than something else? And so I think with coffee being this product that has been around for, you know, millennia, you know, we've only recently started taking interest in how to produce better, how to produce at a higher quality, all the way down the supply chain, from the producers all the way up to yourself being a consumer of coffee, like asking those questions as far as, why is this better? Where can I find good quality? And how does this separate from something like the commodities market, like a Folgers or like a Dunkin' Donuts or something like that?
Having immersed yourself in this culture, how did you grow the skills to be able to go from a couple of friends working on the bar to sourcing product and building out a roastery to be able to serve such a large market?
Well, I think, I mean, something that has been our focus from the beginning and kind of just naturally occurring like core of our business is that we've been always very relationally based sort of business. Like this business was born out of the relationship that we all had together and we could all support and lean on each other. And in that whole process of brainstorming, I mean, even before that of like being on bar and learning, like we've worked with a lot of like really great people here in the Charlotte like coffee industry. And we've leaned on those people to get feedback on and learn from. And that's kind of just expanded as we've grown. Like we've been able to tap into and rely on a lot of really great people and really great relationships that have been able to support us and help us along the way. I mean, it's still a learning process, and at some point you're at different points you're kind of alone in that process, and at different points there are people that can kind of lend you a hand. For us, it was I don't know. I'd say the relationships that we've been able to have through initially the roaster that we started using when we started our pop-ups, which was Pasture Coffee based out of Pennsylvania, Lancaster, Pennsylvania.
Because we didn't start roasting our coffee when we started our concept. We were sourcing through another coffee roaster that we prized a good bit for their coffee as well.
Yeah, so I think in that case, in those very early days, you're partnering with folks on the space, and you're also partnering with suppliers who share the same kind of values that you have, and you're synthesizing this into a story that you're calling Hex. So I'm fascinated to learn a little bit more about how you could see that trajectory. What were the milestones that you set for yourself along the way to say, okay, when we get this big, now we can get a physical space. We can start sourcing our own beans. When we get this big, we can start doing packaging. What, you know, how do you know that you're on the path that you want to be on for the right kind of growth?
So I think for us, one thing that we've always valued is sustainability. As John Michael said earlier, from the people who are producing the coffee all the way to the consumer. So when we started as a retailer, we chose a great wholesale partner that we knew shared the same value and ethics and quality that we were looking for. So it was a natural thing for us as being more interested in kind of creating sustainable processes from the producer all the way to the consumer. We wanted to open our roastery, and that was something that we were always interested in from kind of day one. And so we've always been trying to think about our business 5 years ahead and trying to create steps to get to those places as we work through these things that we have on a daily basis. We have just as much interest as what's coming for us 5 years ahead and trying to create something that is equitable and also sustainable for anybody that's going to come into the process.
As you've grown along the way, have you found yourselves focusing on specific roles within your company?
I mean, that's a big learning process along the way. Cause I mean, as a business owner, like you're just asked to wear every hat there is, you know, like at least at first, like you start out like doing everything. And it's, I mean, when we started the business, we all had jobs as like other jobs as well. So we had to wear each other's hats too. There wasn't even like a specific roles that each of us could play. It was just like, this is what needs to get done. These things get done doesn't really matter. We can all just like kind of share the workload and do things at different times and make sure that things are all like, you know, tied up in a bow. As we've grown, it's come blatantly obvious that wearing that many hats is difficult to do as you grow, and kind of deciding on which hats are yours, and kind of isolating your role specifically, becomes really helpful. But that's something that's it's kind of a blurry line. You know, it's a slow transition to move into those spaces where you're kind of focusing on those specific things that you feel you can specialize in or bring the company.
Yeah. I think there were definitely times and still are times like when we first got started where we were trying to, you know, get stuff done, and whether it be through the fact that, you know, we were working other jobs outside of this passion project of ours, or like physical space that we shared together. There were definitely times where at least one of us was feeling a little left out because those roles weren't necessarily defined. And so over the past few years, just trying to get out of the mentality of like, we just have to get stuff done, but moving more so into a mentality of we have to get things done, but how do we get things done with the level of quality and integrity that that we want our company to be known for? It's in a lot of ways necessitated our division of labor. It's necessitated a lot more collaboration outside of just like muscling through the day to day. It's really kind of forced us to look a little bit more holistically at the things that we want to do and how those things integrate into the bigger picture of the company of Hex Coffee.
How big is your team right now? Have you grown beyond the three of you?
Yeah, we have. Mainly over at the cafe. We've had over the course of the past 2 years, we've had six people working for us. Six or seven people working for us. We have four people working for us now. We've contracted out help over at the roastery, but the roastery is still in, I would say, in its infancy state or infancy phase of growing and the needs that it has. But the cafe has actually grown well enough for us to be able to bring on a staff of four and support them and to pour into them, which has been really, really cool.
So, given that you started on the bar and now you're handing that responsibility over to folks, who are the, you know, what's the talent that you want to attract to Hex? And tell me a little bit about how it feels to hand off some of the responsibility on the front line, because I hear you so passionate about that frontline customer experience. I'd love to know a little bit more about how it was for you to bring folks into that world.
So I guess, I mean, at the cafe is where we've brought in most of our staff. Like, I think, I mean, from the get-go, we have like, I don't know, how do I explain this? We have like a really high standard for what we want to achieve with coffee, with the quality of the coffee that we're putting out. And even above that, it comes down to the way in which our coffee is served. So the first thing that we're always looking for when we're hiring anybody, whether it's at the roastery or at the cafe, is hiring for quality of personality and character first. And after that, I feel like we have a pretty thorough understanding of our product and the quality that we're trying to achieve and how to get there, that training somebody to produce that quality is not nearly as difficult as training somebody to be a great person, you know? So, I mean, we just have really great people on staff, and we've been really lucky with finding the people that we have. And it's been very easy to pour into them, and they've been able to take on responsibilities kind of naturally as we've grown and needed to hand off those responsibilities. And I don't know, just hiring for a character has really just like made it very, very easy on us in that regard.
I think one other thing I'm interested in when you're hiring folks, especially for the bar, you do things a little bit different than many of your competitors. Tell me a little bit about the coffee shot.
Yeah. So, I can't say that we will take credit for it or anything. I'll say we can take maybe credit for doing maybe being first in the States to start debuting it. I don't know.
On a production, like a day-to-day production level.
Yeah, maybe. Probably. Yeah. But I mean, its origins, as far as I know, is kind of through whispers on the internet. There was a barista named Matt Perger who did these coffee shots in I think it was 2013 barista competition as a way of kind of replicating a filter coffee type experience, but doing that through the espresso machine. And he wrote some little articles about it, and there were people talking about it at the time, kind of all leading up to it. So when we started, we knew it was something that we wanted to experiment with. And the theory of it was always very interesting to me. So when we were able to kind of move out of our pop-up phase and settle down into our kind of cafe space phase, we purchased our first espresso machine, which was set up in, me and John Michael were roommates at the time. It was set up on our dining room table, and we were experimenting with espressos, experimenting with these coffee shots and doing trial and error and figuring out, okay, is this something that we can actually do? Is this something that we can actually figure out how to do and make it tasty and replicable? And I don't know, it was just like a lot of trial and error and dissecting the brewing process and kind of understanding what goes on in a pour over and how that can relate to what you are making the coffee do when you do a coffee shot. But essentially if your listeners haven't ever heard of it, it's essentially a pour over, that you do using your espresso machine. So it kind of blurs the line between what is espresso and what is filter coffee, because you're brewing it with an espresso machine, but it tastes like filter coffee. It comes out like filter coffee. But there are also a lot of benefits to it, on a kind of heady theoretical coffee perspective. It's a really great way to achieve really flavorful high extractions of coffee. And for us, and the kind of coffee that we look to achieve is high extractions. We look to achieve high extracting, really flavorful coffee, which means we're essentially getting the most out of our coffee as we can. And coffee shots allow us to do that. It allows us to do it quickly, and it allows us to do it really consistently.
I think too, part of the reason why we ended up utilizing the coffee shot was just as much out of necessity as it was out of curiosity. When we moved into our cafe location, we were sharing a space with this bottle shop, and so we created a bar and a place that didn't have the utilities that you would necessarily need to start a coffee shop. One of those being running water for a batch brewer. And so because we weren't able to set up a batch brewer for people to get like a grab and go cup of coffee, like if somebody walks in and is just like, I just want a cup of coffee, because we didn't have the utilities to do that in our space, we had to get creative with how we were going to address that problem. So that way we didn't isolate, or not necessarily isolate, but kind of abandon a customer base that really just wants a cup of coffee first thing in the morning that they don't have to really think too much about. And so it gave us the ability to make our approach to brewing coffee a little bit more approachable, outside of just saying, yeah, we just brew espresso, which for a lot of people before we, kind of came onto the scene, espresso was, kind of something that you would either drink to like get a punch of caffeine, or you just liked it tasting strong and bitter, or you just it felt a little unapproachable, and much like taking like a shot of whiskey or something like that. Like it's like something that only certain people can do. And so we did our best, and I think we've done a really good job of kind of making espresso much more approachable to people. And by blurring the line of what a filter coffee can be for what an espresso can be, and also paying pretty good attention to making sure that when we brew something, we're brewing it well and brewing it fully, so that way it does taste sweet. It does have a complexity and flavor. It really has made our concept fairly approachable to the more like adventurous coffee lover and the person who is just, like I said, just coming in for that quick cup of coffee on their way into work.
Well, it strikes me that there's probably lots of opportunities to surprise and delight somebody. As you said, that customer that's coming in for that grab and go cup, you probably have a lot of conversations that say, we're going to do something for you. Just trust us. Right.
Yeah, exactly. And between like people that are like coming in, I mean, you can kind of read the room a little bit of like what that person is looking for, whether they're like looking to be intrigued by something, or if they're looking to just be like, hey, shut up, I need a cup of coffee. Like, you can be like, yeah, absolutely, I'll have it in 45 seconds. Or you can be like, hey, if you're up for it, we don't do pour overs, we don't do batch brew or anything, but if you're willing, I'll do this coffee shot for you. It's super delicious. It'll be really great. And it's something new that I know that you've probably never had before. So it's definitely like a great talking point while also serving a like kind of utility purpose as well.
Yeah. Well, it leads me to my next question about carving out a niche, especially in a city like Charlotte that's grown significantly in the past few years. You've got competitors coming at you from all sides, most of whom are large multinational organizations that have drive-throughs, that offer fast service, that do have that batch brew. What are you doing to ensure that you're growing a customer base that's going to understand what you're offering and remain loyal to Hex Coffee?
So honestly, I think a lot of this just boils down to Southern culture in general. Southern people are super loyal, but that can either be a good thing or a bad thing. We can be,
it's like they refer to soda as Coke. Or Pepsi, yeah. Instead of pop or soda pop or whatever. Yeah.
And I think one of the things that we've always, in kind of speaking back to how we hire, is we always have viewed ourselves as a hospitality company that does coffee. And we want to be able to take someone from where they are. And if that person who wants just hey, I want a cup of coffee, and you could tell they have no desire to know about extraction theory or something like that, that's okay. We're here to provide a service and provide quality with the thing that we are serving. So that's like, and if we can create a relationship there, then we can open up people's minds more to what coffee can be and more of the specialty coffee industry in general. And hopefully we can create what I would call converts into that world, because it does us no good if, let's be honest, there's probably a little bit of a reputation with baristas to turn our nose up or push people away thinking, hey, we know something more than you. Because education in itself, I think, is something that is a service. but it also can bring up a lot of pride things, because if you feel like you don't know something, or if you feel uncomfortable with the situation, then you're never going to open your mind to what that can be. So if you can relate to those people and reach them where they are, you can take them to where you're going by providing a service of education. You just happen to get a cup of coffee with it.
Thinking back to the five-year plan, and is the five-year plan something that you update annually and it's always about the next 5 years? Or do you have a sense that there's going to be a five-year chapter and then another five-year chapter?
I mean, depending on who you ask, like I might update mine 5 minutes. Like
it's always 5 years from now.
Yeah, like this exact moment.
I'm writing mine currently. Yeah. For me, being someone who didn't work in coffee and kind of falling in love with this industry based off the relationships that I had, I've always, as Tanner mentioned earlier, I was a public servant working for the city of Charlotte. I got sick of talking about doing things and I just wanted to do something. And so that's why I wanted to work in specialty coffee, because I felt like there was a great communal asset there to create something that was unique for Charlotte.
For whatever reason, the city didn't think you were valuable enough to keep you. <Yeah. laughs>
That being said, it's just something that has always been at the forefront of like thinking forward of like, I've worked in urban planning and I've seen the potential in Charlotte and I see how truly great it can be. And we are in a major city. Like I think the 15th biggest city in the country now. And we're in a major city where you can still write a lot of the culture of what's to come. Whereas if you go to New York City or you go to LA doing something like we're doing, we honestly would probably be more part of the noise rather than being on the front end of the culture. So we just wanted to create something that wasn't here in Charlotte. And so a lot of our plans go further than just coffee. We have other ideas and other concepts that we potentially want to do in the future. And we're always kind of talking through those things, but knowing that we're focusing on kind of the same core principles. And that's why we've always said we're a hospitality company that does X. You know, right now it's coffee, but it might also be something later down the road.
And we're also like, I mean, being from the position that we're in, where we started, like, you know, by chatting at a local bar and being baristas to building our own tables, and everything that we've done has been very organic and just baby steps at a time, which has led us to this place.
We're actually constructing cabinetry in our roastery right now.
Like, yeah. Like,
so, kind of doing that ourselves.
Yeah. So our five-year plan is, for me at least, it's something that's very fluid. Like, we're constantly thinking about where we can go in any specific thing. But it has also been really helpful to be flexible. Because I know for me specifically, like, our cafe space is actually like almost kind of like an installation at basically that bar that we had our first pop-up in. The owner at the time basically contacted us and asked us if he wanted to put in an installation and kind of convert that into our cafe space. So that's been our main spot that we've been working out of for a long time. But if you asked me at that time if that was what I wanted to do, that was definitely a hard pill to swallow. It wasn't necessarily on the five-year plan, but being flexible and seeing the utility of it and the potential and where that could take us has been really helpful. And you kind of have to swallow your pride a little bit and just take the next step as it comes as well.
Well, along those lines, tell me about a time that something didn't go as expected and you either had to retreat or pivot or change your mind about how you were going to proceed to keep the brand moving forward.
Where to begin?
Yeah. Which,
I think which one? That's the usual response. Which time?
You mean like last Tuesday or? Geez. Well, I would say that I would say that a lot of the things that we've wanted to do, like when we first sat down, this is a little bit more macro, but like when we first sat down to try and conceptualize Hex, we had a pretty good idea about how we wanted to go, the things that we wanted to do, but without really having the means to get there. I mean, like we were saying, we worked as baristas and we obviously, you know, that job is not the most lucrative when it comes to investing and starting a business. Like we ended up having to kind of compromise and rely on other people to just be able to either like take that first step or to get something up off the ground. And so I feel like in so many ways, our company has been defined by the things that maybe didn't go according to plan and finding ways for us to adapt and to improvise. I mean, we started a cafe in a bottle shop. We started a roastery because we had relationship with another coffee roaster in town that wasn't utilizing their space one day a week.
The list goes on.
The list goes on. I mean, it's literally in a lot of ways, it's been as much a lesson in business as much as it is the lesson in improvisation, which has been that's probably the biggest headache for me personally. Out of the three of us, I'm much more of a static person. And so having to be flex, having to change venue, not having a place that we could call our own for the first 2 years of our company, was a lesson in like, okay, like we believe in the concept. We believe in what we're trying to do. We believe in being hospitable people. And if that means that we have to be hospitable and host in a place that isn't ours for a time, then we will do so with pride and integrity, and everything else will fall into place.
So understanding how strong that sense of place is and that sense of community is in your plan, what's in the cards? Is it more dedicated physical location? Is it more co-location like what you've got now? Or are you focused on building out a brand in a way that you're bringing your product more directly to consumer at their home?
Yes.
All of those.
Yeah. I'd say it's a little of all of that. Like we definitely like the coffee business is at the core of what we're doing right now. And that is really, really important to us. But like we know that there are a lot of other ways to bring people together. Obviously, the bottle shop that we're working in has a very loyal and dedicated family that comes there on a regular basis. We know that food brings everyone together. And so like finding ways to generate that sense of place, that sense of community, for anybody, is the direction that we want to go, and whatever vehicle we have to take to do that is viable.
And I think for us, it's been just structuring our business to be able to be able to provide the experience that we're looking to achieve in any sort of environment that comes at us. If there's an opportunity for another cafe, we know that we can execute that the way that we want to. If there's an opportunity for growth at the roastery, we know that we can execute that. If there's an opportunity to start a new concept or like a shared concept or anything like that, like we know our our values, our ethics, our attention to detail, and the quality that we're after, and we're confident that we can achieve that. For us currently, it's taking the things that we have now and doing them well. So it's serving at the cafe, growing at the cafe, and growing our family there, and it's growing at the roastery, serving people coffee, sourcing better coffee, finding more avenues to get our coffee out there, and trying to expand our own family of employees as well. So we're taking the things that we have currently and constantly growing them, while also keeping an eye out for what else we could be digging our mitts into, I guess. I don't know.
Well, we're almost out of time, but I am going to ask a very a selfish question that my wife, who's our executive producer of the show here, insists that I ask. And I am told that because my parents never invested in good coffee growing up, I've never developed a taste for it myself. It always registers to me as being very bitter. If I wanted to enjoy a cup of coffee with my wife, who adores coffee, what's the entry point for someone like me? Where would I start to learn to love coffee the way that you all do?
I mean, well, if you send us your address, we'll send you some of ours. So.
That's the perfect answer. I just haven't had access to Hex Coffee is what I'm hearing.
Yeah, exactly. No. I'm kind of maybe in a little bit of like a similar boat. Like I was around coffee all growing up and my parents had like coffee every morning, but it was bad coffee, like made really strong, really bitter, you know, the bulk stuff you get at Costco. And that's not my taste at all. And so our ethos for, you know, sourcing coffee is high quality coffees, roasting it in a way to preserve vibrancy, clarity of flavor and sweetness while not introducing any bitterness as well, which I think is for most non-coffee drinkers, the biggest turnoff is how bitter the coffee can be. So it's, I think for some of those people, it's just finding the right kind of coffee. I'm not saying we're the only roaster that does coffee in this style or anything like that. But that's just our ethos with it. I feel like our coffee is pretty vibrant and sweet. If you like teas and stuff, I think you could get into our coffee. Cause I don't think our coffee is more, it definitely doesn't register on that like bitter note that a lot of like coffee flavored coffee people are familiar with.
I think another way that we've managed to convert people is meeting people where they're at. And one of our best selling to date drinks that we sell is a vanilla latte that we make with cold brew and serve on draft. And so getting people, like, even though like our coffee is great without cream and sugar, adding milk and vanilla to it just seems to just do it for people.
I mean, it tastes like melted ice cream. It's hard to argue with it.
Yeah, it really, really is. And the fact that it's on draft, like if somebody were to walk in and say, oh, I like sweet things, like I got you covered, and we're handing them a essentially melted ice cream drink that they just go nuts over. So yeah.
Well, it sounds like I need to get back to Charlotte pretty quickly.
That'd be fine with us. Let us know when you're in.
Before we go, just to really put a button on this, what's your dream for Hex Coffee? How big does this operation get for you to feel like you're really having the impact that you want to have in coffee culture?
I think personally, for me, a dream is somewhat already realized in the fact that we've been able to make great relationships with incredible people using the vehicle of coffee. That is just awesome. And that's really cool to kind of witness people that the other night we actually had our Christmas party with four other companies who all are kind of like either directly tied or loosely tied to Hex. And we brought these people in and I was sitting in the room and I realized I didn't know any of these people 3 years ago. And that was a really, really incredible thing to kind of experience, from almost like an out of body experience, just watching these people who are creating and doing incredible things in Charlotte be in one room together. And when we started Hex, sometimes I felt like we were a little bit alone in a battle, and we didn't have a lot of resources, and we've hopefully can just be an access point for people to be able to create and develop something really special just to make Charlotte overall a better place.
Extraordinary. John, Tanner, Chandler, the team from Hex Coffee in Charlotte, North Carolina, thanks for spending time with us today on The Build.
Yeah, thank you.
Thank you. Thanks so much. Yeah.
Thanks again for listening to this episode of The Build. Our talent coordinator is Nicole Hubbard. Our production team for this episode included Leah Gruber, Amelia Lohman, and April Smith. Podfly Productions manages our post-production. Our theme music is performed by Arrows and Sound. Our director of operations is Katie Cohen-Zonizer, and our executive producer is Lori Taylor. I'm Joe Taylor Jr.
Thanks for listening to this episode of The Build. We hope you'll share this series with your friends and provide us with feedback on the iTunes Store. You can also subscribe to weekly updates and learn more about upcoming guests by visiting our show page at thebuild.biz. This has been a 2820 radio production.